Hi, this is James Lawther, and welcome back to part two of the Kickstart. So the objective of part two is to talk to you about everything you need to do to set up your events. How do you engage your sponsor? What about the team that you're going to use? And then what we'll do is we'll concentrate a wee bit on the tips and techniques that will really give you the confidence that you need to facilitate your own session. So first off, let's talk about sponsorship. Now, sponsorship's everything in organisations. And it really is central to the Kickstart approach. Sponsors come in all shapes and sizes. Some of them are a little bit more useful than others. And if you get a choice, and you might not be so lucky, there are a number of sponsors that you really might want to try and avoid. Now, first of these is the executive sponsor. Now, if you have an executive sponsor, this is a person who's got a really senior role in the organisation. Might be the chief executive or a board member. And although that can be a real ego boost, it really is a double-edged sword, because unfortunately what you'll find is that they won't have the time you need. They won't be able to give you the support that you want. So executive sponsors are best given the swerve. The next type of sponsor is best worth avoiding is the I Want a Promotion sponsor. Now, just because somebody sees your project is important and thinks it'd be good for their career to sponsor it, that doesn't necessarily mean they're in a position to break down walls for you and solve all your problems. What you need is somebody who's got real organisational clout, not somebody who's bitten off more than they can chew. Or another type of no-hoper sponsor is the never-there sponsor. Now, some sponsors really do want to help you. Let's be honest, they never have time to help you. They're busy jetting off around the world, and whilst they will return your emails, and they're prepared to have a call at 8:30 at night, you maybe don't want that. Sometimes you need somebody you can just sit down with face to face and have a chat. And finally, possibly the worst type of sponsor is the maverick. Now, some sponsors will try and push everything under the radar. They'll cut corners, they'll avoid business processes and policies, and they avoid procedures like the plague. Now, on occasion, it's invaluable to have somebody who will run roughshod over the system to get you what you need. But most of the time, a maverick sponsor is a bit of a liability. You're never entirely sure what's going to come crashing down around your ears. Well, this begs the question, so what's the best type of sponsor? Now, if you want it to succeed, you need a sponsor who really wants to improve the service you offer. That's a real bonus. Now, if you can't find one of those, you do at least need somebody who's prepared to have a go. So somebody's inquisitive enough to let you have an afternoon of their time at an event. Now, what do you need out of a sponsor? You want somebody who's prepared to make a decision. Somebody who's not a shrieking violet and knows where projects should go. You want somebody who's got clout and who's got a little bit of respect within the organisation. You'll need somebody who'll get you the resources you need to implement the projects you want. And somebody who'll manage other stakeholders in the organisation and remove the roadblocks that get in the way of progress. That all sounds great, but the reality is probably not quite so positive. So what's the real minimum you can get away with? Well, you need a boss who's prepared to give you 3 hours in the next team meeting to let you run a service improvement event. And your boss, who now, by the way, is your sponsor, needs to be prepared to listen to what he's told during the event. And the most important thing, needs to make some decisions off the back of it. And that's the bit, the decision-making bit, that can be the most frightening for some people. If you've been in command for a long time, you're used to having your requests acted upon. And these type of people aren't really that strong at realising that some of the things that happen are not quite as clever as they thought. They may even have to admit this to their teams and their bosses. If you put yourself in their position, it can be quite a threatening place to be. This can be even harder if the sponsor's been in the business for 20 years, because usually they're responsible for the way that things currently work. And by its very nature, any process improvement program is going to point out the things that don't work as well as they could do. Now, all this means is you need a sponsor who really is strong enough to take the feedback and act upon it. Of course, there is another option. If you run your own department, there is absolutely nothing stopping you from being your own sponsor. And that's something I'd really urge you to have a go at. See what you can do by yourself. Now, of course, all of this leads to some action steps. First of all, you need to identify who your sponsor is. And once you're clear about who it is, it'd be polite, if nothing else, have a conversation with them to discuss running a Kickstarter event. There's a sponsor briefing sheet that you can download on the website. Now, at the risk of teaching you to suck eggs, downloading the briefing sheet and banging it out as an email really doesn't cut it. You need to have a conversation. Now, once you've had that conversation, you need some agreement that you'll hold the event. But most importantly, you need the attendance of the sponsor to show that they're serious about it. And finally, remember, it's highly unlikely that you will find the perfect sponsor. They don't tend to exist. So you'll have to work with what you have. And that's the beauty of a Kickstarter event, because you can engage your sponsor as much as you can your team. So having discussed your sponsor, who else do you need there? What about your attendees? For the event to work well, you need at least about 15 people. If there's less than that, the process game really does become a little futile and academic. Depending on your level of comfort and your experience, you can actually run it up to about 100 people. If you want to go more than that, you probably need to find yourself some help in terms of additional facilitators. Who should attend really is dependent upon the organisation. Now you have some choices here. What you can do is run a session with people from one department, and you'll get something out of that. But if you can widen your net, so well the better. So let me give you a nice simple example. Imagine you run a busy pizza delivery store. You could choose to run your session solely with the guys who run the ovens all day for you. And you'll get something out of that. They'll tell you some interesting things. You'll get some insights of stuff that you don't know. But it would be better to include the people who take the orders and make the pizzas. And then actually include some of the people who deliver them once they're cooked as well. And if you're really feeling adventurous, how about including some customers and also the supplier of your ingredients? And that's the key, I suppose. It all comes down to how adventurous you're feeling. But the more people you can invite from along the activity, the more you'll get out of it. And of course, if this is your first attempt at a session, I'd recommend you start with a small team, maybe 15 people. And in that case, you know, get the guys who are doing the oven. That's great. That'll be a really good start. You can run a pilot and you'll see how it goes. You won't get the full impact, but you'll be absolutely sure in your own mind you can run a session in anger. There are only a couple of must-haves, and that is, at the risk of stating the bleeding obvious, you need the people who actually do the work. They're the ones who know what goes on. And secondly, you will need to include a sponsor at the end of the session, because there will be some requests made to work on things, and some agreement will be needed. It can be a really damp squib if you get everybody energised about stuff, wanting to take forwards, only find that they've got to wait 6 weeks before they can present it at the next supervisory meeting. Now, in terms of action steps, first one, decide who you want to invite to the session. Secondly, and sorry if this is obvious, but good to invite them. And thirdly, if you wish, there's a downloadable session briefing sheet on the website. It might be a good idea to have a 25-minute or so briefing session just before the event so people get a sense of what you're trying to achieve. In terms of logistics, to run a session you'll need the following facilities. Possibly the most important thing is a room which is large enough to seat everybody very comfortably in. And you want to be able to move the furniture about. This bit's quite important. If you've got a lecture theatre with a load of fixed seating, it really won't work for you. Next, for every 10 to 15 people, or natural team group, you'll need some flip charts and a stand and some pens. And you'll also need a projector for a PowerPoint presentation, which you can use if you choose to. For every group of 10 to 15 people, you need a stopwatch and a balloon and a handful of spares. You need a large A0 size copy of your top level business process diagram, and I'll explain that in a minute, and a suitable wall or board to stick it on. A box of sweets, and I always recommend tea and biscuits, if only to keep your audience sweet. But don't worry, that's all written down for you on the website. Action steps, obviously, book the appropriate facilities. Now next, what I'd like to do is talk you through some facilitation tips. When you're running a Kickstart event, half the battle is understanding how to facilitate a conversation. How do you steer the conversation in a sensible direction without running roughshod over people's emotions and ideas? How do you give people the opportunity to say their piece, whilst at the same time shutting them up when it's appropriate to do so? So the real key trick here is being able to chair the debate. Of course, this isn't a facilitation skills training package, and it might well be that you're very competent at this anyway. But if you feel uncomfortable, here are our top 10, well actually there's 11 of them, tips for you. Number 1. Practice makes perfect. If this is your first attempt at Kickstart, and I know I've said this before, but if it's your first go, I strongly, really strongly recommend that you have a small-scale run-through before you hold the main event. It'll work off the shelf, and I've done it hundreds of times myself. But because you won't have experienced it firsthand, you will feel a little bit exposed and nervous. If you run it once or twice in a safe environment, you'll be completely familiar with it, you'll know exactly what happens next, you won't fumble through it, and most importantly of all, you'll just feel comfortable about how the whole thing hangs together. And of course, that comfort will give you confidence. Second tip is get some help. So if you feel really nervous, get some help. A lot of organisations will have a human resources or training department that have got experience in running these sort of events, and they'll be able to buddy up with you. And if there's nobody like that about, ask your colleagues. 9 times out of 10, one of them will be experienced in doing this, and if they're not, somebody will be prepared to have a go with you. And that's all you need, is a little bit of moral support. Third thing to remember is it really doesn't have to be perfect. The whole point, and I mean that, the whole point of a Kickstart is to make a start. It's about getting people up and running, thinking about continuous improvement. So success looks like achieving that aim. If you stumble a bit, who cares? It really doesn't matter. Just so long as you get a handful of improvement projects out of the back end of the session. Now the fourth one is really important, really helpful. The audience is your friend. And what do I mean by that? From time to time, you will be blindsided. Somebody in the group is going to give you a hard time. They'll make you feel uncomfortable, they'll be disruptive, they'll point out the inadequacies of your approach. And when this happens, it's really easy to feel pressurized and to start to get into an argument. And the solution is simple. All you have to do is ask one question. What does everybody else think? And by doing that, you take the pressure off. If the disruptive person is really being awkward and helpful, then everybody in the audience will be thinking exactly the same thing as you, and they will shut him down. And to be honest with you, if it's your problem, they'll shut you down as well, so you'll know and you'll be able to move on with it. Either way, it really does take the steam out of the conversation. And remember, you don't have to have all the answers. You just need to keep the conversation moving. Now, disruptive people come in all sizes and shapes and behave in all manners of ways. So there's a PDF you can download, which is on the website, which will give you a little bit more help on that. Fifth thing is just remember who should be talking. So the whole point is to get your audience engaged and talking. You want their views, their opinions, and their ideas out in the open. So, you know, really try to avoid closed yes-no questions, because unsurprisingly, you'll get closed yes-no answers, which is kind of exactly what you don't want. It's far better to ask open questions. Who did that? What did they do? Where did they do it? When, how, and why? It's good practice to keep your eye on the group as well, because you'll see who's being quiet, and then you can involve them. In large groups, it can be difficult to bring everybody in. But if there are pockets or teams who aren't expressing their opinion, it's really quite important to ask them and to engage them in the debate. And don't be scared, just ask them straight out, what do you think? And one final thought for you here is, remember that your opinions, particularly if you've got strong ones, but your opinions aren't the ones you want to hear, right? Because you already know what they are. And the whole aim of the session is to get other people's views out. So if you really want to contribute to a session, ask somebody else to facilitate it for you. Now, another thought I'd like to give you is that clarity is king. What do I mean about that? Well, generalizations really are a problem and you should avoid using them at all costs. So make sure that people who are contributing to your session are really specific, as specific as possible. Now, why is that? Well, because generalizations are open to misinterpretation. And if you get misinterpretation, you'll get disagreement. So, if people are being vague or using stereotypes, you need to narrow it down. Ask questions like who specifically or what specifically, and get them to be really clear what the issues are. And it's also a good idea to paraphrase discussions. If you do that, you can get to the nub of the issue and make sure that everybody understands the point. So it's all about clarification. The next thing is you've got challenging conversations, but you really don't want to lead them. And what does that mean about that? So if a conversation starts to dry up, ask some challenging questions to get people to open up a bit and get them to think about it a bit more broadly. Now, what's a good challenging question? Well, something like, what could get in the way? What would be the most positive outcome? You kind of need to avoid leading questions, though, because there is a difference. So a leading question would be, have you considered doing A, B, or C? And absolutely, your audience are going to sit back and think, oh, he's telling us we should consider doing A, B, and C. And as I said, that's not what you want. Your job is to get everybody else's thoughts out of the open and not to be giving them the benefit of yours. One of the key skills of a good facilitator is the ability to reframe issues. By that I mean reframing statements so that it improves people's understanding or highlights disagreements. If you do this well, you can help people reach different conclusions because they'll see the problem from a different perspective or in a different way. Now let me give you an example. Maybe a closed statement would be something like, we don't have enough people to deal with these complaints. It's fairly emphatic, yeah? So once you've heard that, first thing to do is paraphrase the issue. And by doing that, you show people that you've listened to them and that you accept that the problem exists. And then reframe it. So it'd be something like, right, I see the volume of complaints is more than you can cope with, but why are they so high? What's causing them? And by doing that, you just take the conversation on. Now, it's not rocket science, but it is just pushing the conversation forward. Next thing to worry about is summarising stuff. So it does my head in, I'll be honest with you, but from time to time, a group will get caught in a circular debate, and they will go round and round and round the same old houses. And summarising is a really good way to draw issues to a conclusion. And you can also use it to make the point that they really are banging on a bit. So something like, right, we've covered A, B, and C, and the actions are X, Y, and Z. Is it time to move on to the next point? Just be clear and move the conversation on. And if they say it's not time to move on to the next point, we'll clarify the issue, find out what the thing is, what's the sticking point. And of course, be careful you don't get too focused on the process and timing rather than the outcome. Because if you're not careful, you'll find yourself directing rather than facilitating. You need to give the group options about how they spend their time. Point 10, obvious really, is make sure you write things down, make good use of your flip charts, because it's easy for the group to get distracted and chase down rabbit holes. And if that happens, one of the easiest things to do is to recognise an issue, write it up on a flip chart, call that flip chart issues or parking lot or something like that, and then state you'll come back to it later. And you can do that at the end of the session, by which time the heat will come out of the situation and they'll move on with you. And in the same vein, you know, if you've got to a point where you've got agreed issues and actions, write them down. Because it's really invaluable later on when you write the session up, and it also acts as a group memory. And that'll really help you get the sessions focused and moving. Now my final facilitation point, point 11. Is if you can move it an inch, you can move it a mile. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, simply this. If you can facilitate a group with 15 people in, you can do exactly the same with 100 people in. The only difference is that with 100 people, you should break them up into groups when they're doing exercises and get them to work upon themselves. And actually, that makes your life a lot easier because you can walk from group to group and just chivvy them along, but let them do the work themselves. Other than that, all the same rules apply, and it's just a question of confidence. And a final thought, yeah, just relax. It's not an inquisition. It's just a conversation about what the problems are and how they could be addressed. It really is as easy as falling off a log. Now, the action steps. Read through and listen to all of the material. Set up a practice session. I know I've told you to do that 10 times, but set up a practice session. Chat through your approach with other facilitators. And if you want, find somebody to co-facilitate the session with you. Now, the final part of this setup process, really, is to draw a business process diagram. This will be your biggest friend. It's hard to believe it, but it will be. So the aim of this diagram is simply to show people what they actually do on a daily basis, how your department or business is structured and works. Of course, one of the problems that service industries have is that what they do is really intangible. It's not like a factory where you can see everything. And so if you can make it really clear, you're halfway to fixing any issues. Now, a lot of organisations have these diagrams already, but if you don't, there's a PDF on the website which you can download, which will quickly talk you through how to draw one, and also it'll give you some examples of some of the ones you can go and crib from. So in terms of the action steps, find or create that business process diagram. If you've created one from scratch, you need to talk it through with your sponsor and get him to agree it, because they'll be presenting it on the day, so they need to own that document. And print it out nice and big, maybe A0 size, so that you can use it in the event. That's it. You're all set. There's nothing else to worry about. No more preparation. You're ready to go. Just a final thought for you. One of the biggest and simplest ways to improve any process or any service is to write down what you want people to do. Just make sure that everybody is clear and know what's expected of them. And do it in clear, no-nonsense language. Think of yourself as a great chef. If you want your staff to cook great food, you need to give them a recipe. Or, to put it a bit more mundanely, you kind of need a checklist. And with that thought in mind, what I've done is I've written up a checklist of all the things you need to do to prepare your session, which you can download off the website. So good luck setting things up. Tick your way through that checklist. And thank you very much for listening.